freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
Thanks for joining us today. Our goal is to create a timeless resource to teach about the U.S. Constitution and the proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, and how to defend against threats to our republic. Hey, guys, it's good to be back. I was working on our project, Jason's and my project, conservativeeconomy.com, which is very important to our mission and to America.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thanks, Jason. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Guys, we do this podcast because liberty's precious and liberty has price. Brave men and women long before we lived sacrificed many, and recently too. Many gave the ultimate sacrifice for the liberties we have enjoyed. But some people and organizations have usurped our liberties through censorship, canceling, and destroying livelihoods because they don't like dissent and they don't like people who share truths which threaten their power. Today, the biggest threat to the sovereignty where you and I can actually make an impact is what we call the three-headed beast: mainstream media, big tech, and big business. Earlier this year, Google, Apple, Amazon Web Services canceled Parler or stopped giving access to Parler on their platforms. Last week, Apple actually kicked off one of the loudest voices for liberty in America, the Charlie Kirk podcast. That was only for a few days, but they still did it. So folks, we still have a voice, we still have power, and we affect change by where we spend our time, attention, and dollars. That is the reason Jason and I created the free speech alternative to Amazon, which is conservativeeconomy.com. We have thousands and thousands of products you use every day, which are competitively priced. Last we checked, we have about how many categories, Jason?
Yeah, right around 2,000 categories.
It's a lot of work and of the team. And for the tech, Jason's our man. That's a lot of products, guys. Later, we will also be a hub where you can access podcasts and other great, reliable conservative media, including, of course, many leading voices for liberty. Understand this, guys. Wherever you spend, every dollar you spend at conservativeeconomy.com rather than at companies like Amazon, it goes to support freedom-loving companies and this podcast. So we do something for us today. Will you please check out this website, conservativeeconomy.com? Get comfortable with it. Every time you go to a new store, there's a different place where you find your products. And it's a little bit annoying at first. I get it. You know, the same is true at every website, including conservativeeconomy.com. But we need your help. We need an army of people who will participate in the new conservative economy community. So we're confident that you will find many great products and services you need and which will enrich your life. Because fighting economically is how we fight against the three-headed beast. Some people may say, oh, Amazon is not going to get rich from the socks and underwear I buy from them. That's not the point. They're already rich. Jeff Bezos, aka Bezos, they're beyond rich. He's the first or second wealthiest man in the world, depending on the stock market. Secondly, it's about doing all that you can do in the fight for liberty. We're not asking for much. And, you know, history is not asking for much. It's not us. Jason and I are just sounding the call. One of many great Americans, many great Americans, I think, are sounding the call. But we need an army of freedom-loving Americans who will say, send me, which is, you know, an allusion to the book of Isaiah, send me. So we check Conservative Economy out today. And send us a note what you think about the website. On there, you can send us a note or at freedom@patriotcoalitionlive.com. We'd love to hear you. It's very encouraging too, including when you give us tips and corrections. You make us better. So also, your support's very important to us. Please support us at patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. Okay, y'all ready to get in the episode?
Let's do this.
All right, let's do this. Okay, title of today's episode is Article 1, Section 8, Limited Powers of Congress, Part 1. And as a review, Article 1 is about the legislature. Article 1, Section 1 is about our legislature and that it's bicameral, meaning it is comprised of two branches, or chambers, and it and is granted, Congress is granted all lawmaking authority by our Constitution. Does that mean part? It means all. Okay. No. Yeah. Article 1, Section 2 is about the House. Section 3 is about the Senate. Section 4 deals with the times, places, and manner of congressional elections. Section 5 addresses how Congress may conduct business in their respective chambers. Section 6 dealt with congressional pay and privileges. Section 7 talks about how to pass bills, resolutions, and orders in Congress. Jason, every time I read through this, it reinforces it, and it really just reveals what thought and brilliance was put into the Constitution. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, they spent a lot of time back and forth, their committees of detail and style and all sorts of things to get this just right. And it's organized well too, right?
It is. You know, the first article is about lawmaking. Right. And the second is execution, you know, the executive branch, and the third is
and it's no mistake that the very first article is about the very first limited loan of authority that we give to the government, which is, you know, making laws.
It's really inspiring because these are our forefathers. They came before us. So, yeah. Guys, this is our heritage. And if you are a naturalized U.S. citizen, guess what? You have been grafted in. This is your heritage too, which is what America's about now.
And welcome, by the way.
Yes. You know, that's how it works. So I don't want to let my grandparents down. And we don't want America to let our grandparents down. Liberty has a price. It really does. And it's ongoing. So today we're talking about Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. Okay, we said from the beginning that the temporary loan of authority that we give to our legislator to create laws that we must all live by is one of the most sacred authorities we can entrust to them. If that is the case, then the part of the Constitution where we define those powers must be one of the most important sections in this brilliant document. Jason, you just mentioned that.
Yep.
So we're going to spend some time in this section because of its importance and relevance to every aspect of our lives. And because it is one of the most abused sections in the Constitution too. Okay, so we're going to read now. Here we go. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States, unquote.
Yep. There it is. That is essentially the introduction to Article 1, Section 8. And so it generally talks about what those powers of Congress are. Now, fortunately, they get very specific later on, and we'll get into that in future episodes. But let's talk about, you know, this clause. So the clause that Matt just read, I mean, as you know, when we teach on the subject, when we discuss it, we like to go back to the original sources. You know, what were the framers thinking when they were discussing and debating and talking about these things? You know, what
Jason's superpower. That's his superpower, by the way. Guys, if you could, I mean, this guy, if there was a modern day, you know, constitutional scholar, I mean, if Jason was living at that time, he'd be one of those guys, or he would be standing right. I know that this is not in the script, but I mean, Jason consults the original documents and those backing documents and looks at their conversation. So this is a treasure we're talking about. And, you know, I got into this. I know I miss everybody. It's been a couple of weeks, and you know, and when I get into this and dig into it with Jason, because he looks at the original intent, not just the original words, the original intent. And Jason's going to give it to us.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. It's very kind of you. But this is not something that is, you know, I don't have some secret stash and hoard of documents that only I have. So as we've mentioned in the past, you know, every episode we put episode notes up on patriotcoalitionlive.com, and you will see, we'll have links to the quotes we've used, you know, the documents that we pulled them from. So, you know, it's completely up to you guys. You guys can also take it upon yourselves to learn more about this. So again, let's talk about this first clause. And I'm going to read it again really quick. So the Congress shall have a power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. Those are the series of things that they are allowed to do and taxes on. To pay the debts and provide for common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. So again, we went back to look at the the source of this? What were they talking about? And one of the things from James Madison, he probably took, you know, I've read through these things several times. He probably took the best notes of any of the people there. There was a journal there, but Madison's notes, I don't know if he had what would he call it? Audactic, or, you know, he could hear things and just transcribe them later or what, but his notes were really good. So he talks about, and I'm going to quote his notes here. It says the resolution, talking about this resolution for clause one that we just talked about. The resolution stating the cases in which the national legislature ought to legislate was next taken into discussion. So the reason why I pull this out here is because he specifically says that we are going to state the cases in which the national legislature ought to legislate. So it wasn't just this, oh, whatever you want to do, legislature. There were specific cases that they were going to identify and enumerate. Okay. And he said then, quote, on the proposition for giving legislative power in all cases to which the state legislatures were individually incompetent. Mr. Pinckney, this is Madison talking, or making his notes. He said, Mr. Pinckney, one of the delegates, and Mr. Rutledge, another one, objected to the vagueness of the term incompetent and said they could not well decide how to vote until they should see an exact enumeration of the powers comprehended by this definition. So the reason why, we pull this in here because to give the flavor that this, even though many people will make the case that, oh, it says general welfare, and so that means we can do anything that we want to do in Congress. That is not the intent, as we're plainly seeing, and we're laying out this case. And we will continue to do so over the next few weeks. So he said they were originally saying, hey, look, the federal government should do all things which the state governments are incompetent to do. Now, it wasn't a pejorative at that point. It was basically saying, hey, look, they're either not well equipped or knowledgeable enough to do that. They don't have the scope of knowledge to legislate on those things. And so we'll leave the central government to legislate on all things that the states are incompetent in. Well, then Pinckney and Rutledge are saying, well, wait a minute, that's kind of a vague term. So why don't we enumerate these things so that we know exactly what powers we're going to grant the general legislature or the Congress. So they were very, very protective of states' rights. You know, the delegates, they wanted enumeration of those powers and for them to be very specifically defined. One of the delegates, Pierce Butler, he wanted to ensure that this resolution, this clause, what it turned out to be, did not take away any powers from the states. Yeah. And then a couple other delegates, Roger Sherman and Oliver Ellsworth from Connecticut, when they later went and described to the governor of Connecticut what transpired at the Constitutional Convention, he said, quote, those congressional powers extend only to matters respecting the common interests of the Union and are specifically defined so that the particular states retain their sovereignty in all other matters. So again, another reference from two other delegates confirming that these powers were specifically enumerated and not just general in nature. Okay, so there is a few words in this clause, right? It talks about the way how Congress can lay, and it says taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you just completely candidly, when I first read that, I was like, aren't those mostly all the same? I mean, it kind of sounds all about just taking my money, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some specific reasons why they chose those words, right? So taxes, you pretty much know what taxes are. It's a rate or a sum of money. And I'm taking these definitions from Webster's 1828 dictionary, of course, because it was pretty contemporaneous with the writing of the Constitution. It's their understanding of what the words meant at that time, right? So it's a rate or a sum of money assessed on a person or property of a citizen by government for the use of the nation or state. So this is a tax that's assessed on a person. Sometimes, you know, they have what they used to call capitation tax, or every person, a head tax, they called it. Every person paid a certain amount of money or their property, right? So that's what a tax is. A duty is a tax, a toll, an impost, or custom. So any sum of money required by government to be paid on the importation, the exportation, or the consumption of goods. So that's what a duty is. And so the in this case, in this document, the Constitution, this duty, these duties, what they're talking about, are talking about taxing things that are not necessarily personal property. So these are like stamps, stamp acts and parchments and vellums. So things, documents that had to be transacted. These are the sorts of things that they were talking about with duties. And we'll talk about that here in a second, because James Wilson, another delegate, when he was describing and articulating what happened in the Constitutional Convention to his state convention in Pennsylvania, he said, quote, "The word duties was meant to give the general government the power of laying stamp duties on paper, parchment, and vellum." So that's what they meant by duties. And that's why they're separating these things out and not just saying one specific, one general word of taxes. So they're authorizing the general government, the legislature, the Congress, to lay taxes on these specific things. So the next one was imposts. So an impost is essentially any tax or tribute imposed by an authority, particularly a duty or a tax laid by government on goods imported and paid or secured by the importer at the time of importation. So these are essentially customs, right? So again, from the Constitutional Convention, this is from Madison's notes. He says, Mr. Luther Martin asked what was meant by the Committee of Detail in the expression, quote, "duties and imposts." If the meaning were the same, the former, meaning duties, was unnecessary. And if it was different, if the meaning was different, then the matter ought to be made clear. So he's saying, why are we saying duties and imposts? They're kind of the same thing, or at least Luther Martin was under that impression. And so Madison records that duties are applicable to many objects to which the word impost does not relate. The latter, again, meaning imposts, are appropriated to commerce. The former, meaning duties, extend to a variety of objects as stamp duties. So he's again reaffirming that, the duties are for like stamps, parchments, and vellum. So transactions, let's say a deed or a will or something like that would be taxed potentially. Whereas the imposts are something that has to do with commercial transactions like bringing goods into a port. Okay, so that's, they're again kind of delineating the difference between those two. And then finally, the excise tax. So excises are essentially, you would think of them as like, a gasoline tax, cigarette tax, alcohol tax. These are basically, they called them an inland duty or impost because it doesn't happen at the ports of entry. It happens, once they are essentially sold. This is like at a transactional level where you buy gasoline or you buy, alcohol. So these are inland duties or imposts that are laid on commodities consumed or on the retail side of things, which is essentially the last state before they're consumed.
Okay, so what you're seeing here, guys, it's, you might be thinking, man, were these guys tax crazy? I mean, it's not just tax, but 57 different types of taxes. Well, understand the context of what was going on. The Articles of Confederation just failed terribly. They couldn't collect taxes. They didn't have a way to support an army. So they needed to be specific so that they could be successful in collecting taxes and making a central government that could pay for an army, for a military rather.
And to pay back the debts, right, that we had accumulated.
So you might think, are these nut jobs just want to take away? No, it was a very serious issue, because one of the most important responsibilities of our central government, is to collect taxes and to administer those taxes, administer that budget, those resources.
Finances. Yeah, as much as we hate them, I mean, taxes are a necessary part of what we have to do. I mean, we grumble every tax day, but and granted, we're paying way too much. We shouldn't be paying as much tax as we are, but some taxing is important. And it's interesting, because as you read through the notes of the convention, the federal convention, actually more specifically, the exposition of it when they go back to their state conventions and argue for or against it, excuse me. I don't remember who it was, but he's saying And you're right, Matt. They were sort of tax crazy. They were trying to get out of this debt, and they were trying to allow Congress the authority to tax however they needed to. To the point where one of the delegates to his state convention said something to the, and I'm paraphrasing here. He's like, "Yep. So when the goods come into America, they're going to tax it. When those goods are transacted on a bill of goods, they're going to stamp it and tax it. When you bring them into your home for excise taxes, yep, they can go in there and they can tax the stuff that you have in your home. When you buy it from somebody, they can tax it, and then they can also tax you." And so he pretty much laid out all the, if you think of a supply chain, all the points from when a product arrives at our shores to it gets to you, you consume it, and even you yourself, stuff can get taxed. So
yeah, and when you buy something, $1 in an economy is about $11 to $13, because every time it changes hands, someone else gets it until it's taxed down. So when someone says, you know, so-and-so is putting money into an economy, like, so $1 million could be like $11 million, $13 million, but until it's eventually taxed down, it actually changes hands many times. But it's an interesting talk in economics, which we can address another episode.
Yeah, and so let's talk about that last phrase in this clause, which is after it says all the types of taxes, it says, but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Now, note that they didn't say taxes. They just said duties, imposts, and excises. So we just talked about the differences between them all. Taxes is something that we are directly taxed on individually. And so they accepted that because they didn't want that to be necessarily uniform. And we discussed that in other parts of the Constitution. But it does say duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Now, remember, those all have to do with some form of commerce one way or the other. And the reason why they put that in there is some of the states who were very commerce heavy, you know, maybe they exported a lot, or they, you know, they had a lot of shipping. They didn't want certain parts of the economy to be taxed so that their states shared a larger burden. And so to make sure that that didn't happen, they said, okay, all of them have to be uniform. If you're going to tax it, you tax everybody the same. And so that way, if they're going to,
it also prevents someone from, you know, Congress doesn't like a state, that they could destroy a state.
Yep.
I mean,
that's precisely
really thoughtful.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, really thoughtful.
Yeah. Well said. Okay. So let's now kind of talk about the elephant in the room, and that is this concept of the general welfare. Now,
here we go.
Yeah, and we're just going to touch on this today. We're going to get into this more as we progress. But to pay the debts, common defense, and general welfare is what it says in that in this clause. So the source for this clause actually, not, it wasn't exactly word for word, but it is pretty stinking close to what was in Article 3 of the Articles of Confederation. Remember the precursor, you know, this was Constitution 1.0. And in that Article 3 of Articles of Confederation, it says, the said states hereby severally enter into a firm league of friendship with each other for their common defense, the security of their liberties, and their mutual and general welfare. No, it does not say to grant it. It doesn't say that you're going to grant welfare or institute welfare or provide welfare, but merely that they're going to they're entering into this league of friendship for the purposes of their general welfare, among other things.
There you go. So, okay. So you guys are asking, like I said, Jason, are you saying that financial support, i.e. a welfare program or similar programs from the central government are unconstitutional and an abuse of power?
The short answer is yes, right? So, and this goes back to, you have to understand what, you have to remember, what is the purpose of government? Well, we know, because the framers, the founders actually, they put it right in the Declaration of Independence, where it talks about, to secure these liberties, governments are instituted among men. They're saying the whole purpose of government is to secure the liberties. What liberties? Life, liberty, and this pursuit of happiness, which essentially is property, right? So it's the purpose of government is to secure these things. It's not to solve problems. It's not to provide for people. It's not to run their lives. you know, the problems that we have in our society and individually in our towns, communities, et cetera, we're closest to those problems. We can solve them. We don't need a government to solve those. And so that wasn't the purpose of government. It wasn't to provide for people when they're down on their luck, because we have each other for that. We can be compassionate, and we are the most compassionate nation on earth. We help each other all the time. We don't need us to pass our money through the government in order to help each other. And so, yes, again, back to your question, the short answer is yes, it is unconstitutional because it's not listed as one of those enumerated powers in the Constitution.
So when Jason answered it straight away and he gave a little bit of context, I'll do the same. So if you ask somebody, and usually conservatives tend to say, hey, we need to minimize the welfare, you know, change it, what have you. Now, that sounds pretty cold and uncompassionate on its surface, but you got to understand compassion is not the question. We are a compassionate nation. Now, you got to understand the spirit of America is self-reliance and love thy neighbor, which is a biblical reference. It's from the Bible, okay, and helping your neighbor. So that's the spirit of America at our founding. Now, here's another fundamental of organizations, whether it's a business, whether it's a governmental organization, whether it's 1,000 or 20,000 people, it's handling problems at the lowest level is the best way to do it, because people at the lowest level have the best understanding of the situation. Okay.
And in the context of welfare or any sort of direct payments, it doesn't even require government. It could be at the lowest level, but without government.
There we go. And the bigger the program, the greater the fraud, waste, and abuse, which is, you know, and in terms of administrating a program, it is not uncommon to see, let's say, $100 million into a program for welfare, for example. Let's say it's sliced that out. It's just meant to go to single moms. Okay. Now, I grew up single mom. I have five brothers. We learn how to eat fast and fight hard. It's not like I'm coming from a vacuum here or it's academic. It's real to me. And Jason and I spoke deeply about this. Part of learning is painful. It's shaving off the rough edges of what may not be, in this case, constitutional. But it doesn't mean we lack compassion. Now, so the bigger the program, the more fraud, waste, and abuse, and the less actually goes to the need, and it goes towards administration. Okay. So in the letter of the law and the principles of liberty, the letter of the law can allow the states to do it. States can do it. So depending on the state's constitution. So we're saying it's unconstitutional. Second of all, we're saying, hey, this power comes from the sovereign individual through the states, okay? And the more self-reliant we are, our country has so gotten away from just being self-reliant. And when you take away incentive for people to strive, you weaken them. I mean, What's the easiest way that you've ever been to? I remember going to a zoo. I don't remember what state this was, but the trainer had this big, huge condor, and it was like a big hawk or something. You know, it had this glove on, and she was holding it, or he was holding it. And he said, you know how we keep them here? And I said, you feed them. That's right. That's how you tame strong wild beasts. You feed them. You know,
think
how
about
you
that
make,
gang. analogies for today.
you know how you make people weak? Is just give them everything.
Right.
Just give them everything. Now, we've got to balance, you know, I'm suggesting you be a beast. I'm saying you be strong. And it's hard. Liberty is hard, guys.
Yeah.
It's hard.
There are dozens of quotes from our founders who talk exactly about that, right?
So the solution, now here's the thing. I'm in this program with Jason, and I push to be conservative. I push to be, you know, constitutionally minded. You know, I push to live our Judeo-Christian ethos and heritage. And still, in my mind, it's like, but saying we shouldn't have welfare is so uncompassionate and cold. Listen, the number one tool of the tyrant is power. When you have a large national program like the welfare system, you basically have a small number of people controlling the livelihood of millions of Americans, which is how it is right now. And they wield tremendous power over so many Americans. And you know, if someone's on welfare, do they have the right to be free? That's right. That's right. And how do you tame an animal? How do you keep someone from being strong? You just give them everything. Now, in the context of threats to our republic, okay, remember that when you spend your time, attention, and dollars, you empower. So there's a segue here into our commercial. Okay, if you spend your time and dollars with people like Amazon, you empower Amazon to cancel and censor people who are conservatives and people who have principles. Now, right now, Amazon and companies like them give away billions, that's billions of dollars to the enemies of liberty. Now, when you shop with freedom-loving businesses like our sponsor, conservativeeconomy.com, you weaken those who mean to do us harm, and you empower freedom-loving companies, and you help us out with this podcast too. So check out conservativeeconomy.com.
Yeah, so getting back to kind of the this clause one of Article 1, Section 8, you know, we're talking about the whole concept of general welfare. So again, this is going back to the records in Madison's notes, James Madison's notes in the Constitutional Convention. He talks about how Mr. Sherman, another delegate, Roger Sherman, I believe, wished to amend Clause 1 with the quote, "for the payment of said debts and for the defraying the expenses that shall be incurred for the common defense and general welfare." So again, this is yet another reference to the intent of this clause one. He said that it's for the payment of said debts and for the defraying of expenses that shall be incurred for the common defense and general welfare. Some of it had already happened because we were already in debt from the war, but they also recognized that it was going to happen again. We would need funds for that. So that is, again, another insight into why they decided to, or why they are articulating their intent for this. So I'm also going to, you know, I wrote an article on this, I guess it's been about 5 years ago, back in 2016, article called entitled On General Welfare. And it's, you can find it on the patriotcoalition.org website under articles. But this part of it kind of speaks to what we're discussing today. And from that article, it says, "Through the rest of the proceedings of the convention, anytime the clause containing general welfare is brought up," which was on August 11th and August 25th of 1787, "it is in the context of paying the debts owed from the Revolutionary War that were secured to provide the common defense and general welfare of the newly formed nation." And also notice, when the phrase is used in Article 1, Section 8, it immediately follows the phrase "pay the debts," right? So again, this is unquote. So this is, we're gonna get into this a lot more in the next couple of weeks. This is I don't want to call it a pet peeve of mine, but it's a pet project of mine for sure, because it's one of the most abused sections of the Constitution. Because look at how in debt we are.
I imagine, and this would not be shocking to any of you, that the word of the social program was called welfare so that people could refer to the Constitution and say, oh, it's general welfare. Yeah. So they could have called the program anything, but it was very cleverly worded and named. That doesn't mean it's accurately used, because you can be clever for bad reasons too, even with some good intentions. But so just because it's called welfare doesn't mean it is constitutional.
That's right. Yeah. So after we discuss the enumerated powers in the coming weeks, we'll revisit the abuses of the general welfare clause and actually provide an expository argument, you know, proving its original intent. So more to follow on that. So, but just to sum up today, again, this Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 is really the introduction into what the powers of Congress are generally. It's like, you know, in a book, you know, you're going to have a table of contents saying, "Hey, we're going to talk about this," and then they'll actually talk about it and be specific into it, right? So it's kind of the introduction, and to talk a little bit about the taxing powers. You know, it's as we've talked about, it was taken from the Articles of Confederation, not quite word for word, but I mean, the phrases are identical, right? And the fact. So you have to go back to the Articles of Confederation to look at why they put that in there at that point. If we're going to use it now and we're taking it from the Articles of Confederation, we have to know why it was used then. And so we can, by the transitive property, if you will, we know what it's used for now. Okay, so that pretty much wraps it up. Hopefully this has been a valuable podcast episode for you, and it helps you kind of set you up for some of the future episodes that we'll be talking about some of the same content.
Awesome. Great work today. Great to be back with you guys. If you would like to support us, please go to patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. Every penny of support is a big help to us. If you are not already a regular subscriber, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, at places like iHeartRadio and Spotify. Thanks again, everyone. We'll see you here next time.
Take care.
Bye now.